The following is the meditation on the fifth word, I thirst.
Mark tells us that at the outset of his crucifixion, Jesus was offered wine with an opiate in it, but he refused. No bandaged eyes as he stepped in front of the firing squad, no dulled senses as he embraces his agony. When he agreed to drink the cup that the Father had prepared for him, he refused to drink from any other that might sweeten its bitterness. But now the end has nearly come, and he accepts a spongeful of vinegar, just something to moisten his parched lips. Severe dehydration is part of his intense agony, and even sour wine will help. Some have seen this as one more mocking mistreatment. He wanted sweet, cool, refreshing water, and instead somebody ridicules him with bitter vinegar. But others have thought it was just the opposite, in fact. A tiny act of kindness in the midst of otherwise unbroken cruelty. The Roman soldiers always had available a drink called Pasca, P-O-S-C-A. Made of water, sour wine, and a little bit of egg mixed in it, which was said to be very refreshing. I think it was probably that somebody, we don't even know his name, offered to Jesus on a sponge when he uttered this fifth word, I thirst. Arthur Gossip suggests that one of the soldiers may, on the day of judgment, lift his eyes to him who sits upon the throne, with what amazement, he says, will he recognize the one whom he once helped in his hour of greatest need. Maybe you remember the scene in Ben-Hur when Charlton Heston offers a gourd full of water to the man who has stumbled under the weight of the cross, and as their eyes meet, he suddenly recognizes that this is the same one who gave him water when he was on his way to the galleys. With what amazement will he recognize one whom he once helped in his hour of utmost need? John tells us that this word was to fulfill Scripture. What Scripture? Well, we read a moment ago, Psalm 22, verses 14 and 15. I'm poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It's melted within my breast. My strength is dried up. My tongue cleaves to my jaws. In a word, I thirst. But even more explicitly, Psalm 69, verses 20 and 21, insults have broken my heart so that I am in despair. I looked for pity, but there was none, and for comforters, but I found none. For my thirst, they gave me vinegar to drink. Perhaps it ties in with the possibility of mockery. I'll leave that to your own meditation. Was it a tiny blessing or a further tiny indignity? What I'm more interested in this afternoon is this fifth word itself, this cry of need and all that it implies, I thirst. This is the only of the seven sayings, the only one that dealt with Jesus' own personal need. Thirst is a tremendously powerful minor theme that runs throughout the entire gospel account. Jesus begins his ministry, as we've already mentioned, by turning water into wine, thereby providing for the celebration of others. He meets a despised Samaritan woman, little better than a harlot, the town tramp, and he offers her living water, such that she'll never thirst again. A little later on, he generalizes, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall not hunger. He who believes in me shall never thirst. Still later, at the Feast of Tabernacles, he says, if anyone does thirst, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the Scripture has said, out of his heart or out of his innermost being shall flow rivers of living water. Coming to Jesus, then, believing in him, is a matter of quenching a deep inner thirst, one that you may not even realize you have. Yet the truth is that you've been trying to satisfy it in so many other inadequate ways all your life. The gospel is that Jesus will satisfy that thirst so completely that you'll never thirst again. And in fact, you'll become a source of refreshment to others. He who believes in me will not only have his own thirst quenched, but he'll become a source of living waters to others. So I'm interested that this Jesus who promised living water to you and to me, to any who would believe in him, should die confessing his own thirst. And that's just the point, isn't it? He died that we might have life. He who knew no sin became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God. He wept that our joy might be unbroken. He was separated from the Father that we might never have to be. He thirsted so we will never have to thirst again. In the very next paragraph, a soldier runs a spear into his side and out flows blood and water. What appeared to be. It is proof that his heart had ruptured and the red corpuscles separated from the lymph. But it's a picture, isn't it? The living water that quenches our thirst began to flow in the broken heart of Jesus. And all of that raises a very provocative question. For what do you thirst? Jesus said, I have food to eat of which you do not know. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. Is that our food as well? Man shall not live by bread alone, but by what? Every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Do we live by those words or by physical bread? As the heart longs for flowing streams, so longs my soul for thee, O God. My soul is thirsting for God. Is it? It is, but you may not know it. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Ho, everyone that thirsts, come to the waters. And he that has no money, buy and eat. He thirsted that we might be satisfied.